This is Audible.
Building Wealth One House at a Time, Updated and Expanded Second Edition, written by John W. Schaub, narrated by Scott R. Pollock. Copyright by John W. Schaub. This audiobook was recorded in arrangement with McGraw-Hill Education and was produced in the year 2019 by Echo Point Books and Media, LLC, which holds the copyright thereto. Introduction. Tens of thousands of ordinary people have made millions of dollars investing in the most humble of real estate investments, the single-family house. I am one of them, and I have a unique perspective because I have helped thousands of others make their first million by buying houses. Buying, renting, and selling houses is not only highly profitable, but also helps people in your community. By treating people fairly, you develop a reputation for helping others, and many will refer their friends and family to you when they need to sell, buy, or rent. By providing a supply of decent, affordable housing, you help young families live near their work while they save enough to buy their own homes. When you buy a house from someone who needs to get rid of it, you relieve him of a burden. When you sell a house and finance it, you often can help someone buy their first home. Many ordinary people are now millionaires not by winning the lottery, but by systematically buying houses. Rather than put their trust in a company pension plan or the government, they have taken control of their financial destiny. By doing what they have done, you can change your life, become financially independent, and be in control of your financial future. It takes less time than you think. Simply follow the advice in this book. You don't need a lot of education to make a lot of money in real estate. It's not that complicated. In fact, too much education can cause you to overthink and develop analysis paralysis. The one thing that keeps most people poor is the fear of buying that first house. Some of my most successful students have taken a year or more to buy their first house. That's fine, as long as you buy it. The second house will be easier, and as you get better at it, you will really enjoy the process of finding and buying a good deal. My first house. It's not even important that your first house is a great deal. The first house I bought, I paid retail price for and made a 20% down payment. The good news is that I could rent it for a high enough amount to pay the expenses and pay the loan. The reason it has been one of my best investments is that I still have it. The house is paid for, and it is worth many times what I paid for it. An investor with a doctorate in finance would never have bought that house, and he would have never held it without refinancing it. He would have been concerned with his rate of return, his lack of leverage, and his running out of depreciation. He would have never turned a $7,000 investment into more than $400,000, not counting the rent that was collected. The annual rent I collect today is more than double my entire down payment. Building wealth one house at a time does not require a lot of education, money, or even time. It does require one thing, that you buy a house and hold it until it makes you some serious money. This book will show you step by step how you can build your fortune one house at a time. Chapter 1. How buying one house at a time can make you wealthy. Everyone knows something about houses. Ask them and they will tell you their opinion about what house prices are doing. They may even tell you about a good deal they just missed. Most people agree that a house can be a good investment, yet only a few actually make money investing in houses. Houses are not complicated and they're not scary. Their performance is predictable. They produce income when rented, and house rents have a long history of increasing. Likewise, house prices have increased at an average annual rate of roughly 5% for about as long as we can measure. They don't go up every year, and in recessions, they can drop in price. When houses are not going up in price, you will make your best buys. The old adage, "you make your money when you buy," has a double meaning when buying houses. First, you have to buy a house to make money. Just looking won't make you rich. Second, you can make thousands of dollars in profits every time you buy if you buy a house that someone else does not want. Why houses are your best investment? After years of investing, I still buy houses instead of apartments or shopping centers. Why? Houses make me more money with less work than any other investment. There is a common conception that apartments or commercial buildings are less work. I've owned both, and I can tell you that this is not true. The tenants in apartments and commercial properties come and go often. Every time they leave, the property will need work. Every time they move, you need to find a new tenant. Tenants in both apartments and commercial buildings are very demanding. They want an immediate response when something breaks. In short, apartments and commercial property are not passive investments. They require hands-on management and an owner who is available 24/7 for problems. House tenants are different. First, they tend to stay longer. This is a big deal because a long-term tenant reduces both your maintenance and vacancy expense. My house tenants typically stay 5 years or longer. That gives me 5 years of no vacancy and 5 years of low maintenance expenses. You don't have to repaint the inside or clean or replace the carpet until they leave. You want to buy property that attracts long-term, low-maintenance tenants, tenants who will pay rent and take care of your property. You want to buy a property that you can rent to tenants who want your house more than you want them. A side benefit of buying and managing houses is that you can help people sell houses they don't want anymore. You can rent houses to people who need a place to live, and when you sell, you can help people buy their first home. You can solve big problems by buying a house that an owner can't afford and that is ruining their credit. These are all profitable and rewarding experiences. Houses are different from other investments. Houses are unique investments. You can rent them to provide income, but their value does not depend on that income. Even an empty house can make you money, since it will appreciate as much as a full one. I know investors who buy houses in appreciating areas like San Francisco and never rent them. Many wealthy individuals own many expensive houses in places like Aspen or Palm Beach and never rent them. They are happy with the appreciation alone. The value of other investment real estate, such as apartments or commercial property, depends on the amount of income it produces. If you rent an apartment or office space for below market rent, it will be worth less money. An empty house is worth as much as a full one. Houses are safer and more liquid. Houses are safer investments for several reasons. First, you can buy a house with a smaller investment. You can buy a house with a small down payment, so you have less at risk. Lenders routinely will lend more against a house than any other type of property. And the loans that they make are safer because they can be for a long term with a fixed interest rate and payment. This makes the payment smaller. Loans on commercial properties are often shorter in term and some have variable interest rates. A shorter-term loan is riskier because the payments may be higher and you may have to refinance or sell in a down market. Next, there are more buyers for houses than for bigger properties. If you need to sell in a hurry, you can, if you offer a house at a good price. Third, houses rent faster and have fewer vacancies. Apartment vacancies often run 10 to 20%, whereas house vacancies rarely exceed 5%. Commercial properties sit empty for months and even years at a time between tenants. You need a lot of cash in the bank to survive a long-term vacancy in a large building. When you buy, you are dealing with an anxious seller. When you buy a house, typically you are dealing directly with a homeowner who is in a hurry to sell. If the homeowner had plenty of time to sell, then she could wait for a retail price. When you decide to sell any real estate in a hurry, you will have to discount the price to sell it quickly. Learn this lesson. Never put yourself in a position where you have to sell in a hurry. When you buy commercial or apartment property, you are buying from another investor. You are often dealing with someone who is an experienced negotiator. He might be a better negotiator than you are, and that reduces your chances of making a good buy. When you buy from a homeowner, you have the negotiation advantage. They want to sell more than you want to buy, and you won't buy unless you get the price or terms that you need. When you sell, you will get a retail price and all cash. More important, when you decide to sell a house, sell only to a user. You want to sell to someone who really likes the house, because if they really like your house, they will pay a retail price. I had a potential buyer looking at one of my houses, and they called me on their cell phone to ask me a question. I overheard the wife say, "I love this house." I knew then that they would pay full price for the house. Now for the really important part. When you sell a house to an owner-occupant, that person usually can get a long-term, low-interest rate loan for nearly the entire purchase price. This allows you as the seller to get a higher price. Plus, when they borrow from the bank to buy your house, you will receive all cash when you sell. If you want to finance the sale of a house to generate interest income, you have that option. There are always buyers who need help with financing, and often you can sell at an even higher price if you will agree to finance the property for a buyer who cannot qualify for a bank loan. However, if you want the cash to reinvest in another house or just to spend, you can achieve that. A disadvantage of selling an apartment building or commercial property is that the buyer will be another investor. This investor will not love your apartments. They will negotiate to get the best price and terms that they can. Lenders prefer houses. Unlike houses, apartments and commercial properties are not the bank's favorite collateral. Because commercial loans have a higher risk of default and more management responsibility in the event of a foreclosure, banks often limit their commercial loans to 70% of value, and the term of the loans is often shorter. Often, the buyer will not have enough for the down payment, so the deal falls apart, or the seller must agree to finance part or all of the price. Investment property prices can experience large swings as the economy changes. An empty office building or commercial building will sell for a small fraction of what it costs to build. A well-located house will appreciate at a greater rate than an average property and will not suffer as dramatic a drop in value as commercial properties during business recessions. Diversification brings safety and higher profits. Not all houses perform the same. Higher-priced houses may jump more in price during a boom, but can fall in price during a recession. Lower-priced houses are more stable and stay full. It costs a certain amount to buy a lot and build a starter house in your town, and that price is constantly increasing. This supports the lower-priced houses in the market. A major advantage of investing in several houses rather than one big apartment or office building is that you can diversify by investing in different price ranges. By owning both less expensive and more expensive houses, you can have the safety of the lower-priced houses and the upside potential of the higher-priced ones. Plus, if you needed to raise just a little cash, you could sell just one of your houses. If you owned an apartment building, it would be difficult to sell just a part of it to raise cash. When average isn't average at all. Read reports of prices booming or busting with a little skepticism. Remember that the headline writer's job is to sell newspapers or attract page views, and a spectacular headline is more likely to get him a bonus. When the press reports that the average price of a house has risen or dropped, that report is often an exaggeration of what is really happening in the market. The average price of a house sold in your town will include the more expensive houses, which are more likely to stop selling when the market cools off. There is no national house market or national trend for real estate. Although some factors such as interest rates, the economy, and national security have national implications, even these affect different housing markets differently. A hurricane in Texas has little effect on the markets in other states. Housing markets are local in nature. The market in your state can be booming while the next state over is experiencing a recession. In your town, one neighborhood may be appreciating while another is declining in value. Changes in interest rates will have a more profound effect on house sales in towns where there are a lot of first-time buyers than in a town where many buyers are retired and pay cash for their homes. A threat to national security may drive prices up in areas considered safer, while depressing prices in areas perceived as higher risk. How averages can mislead. Suppose that last month 4 houses sold in your town and they sold at these prices: $100,000, $150,000, $150,000, and $400,000. The average price of a house sold that month was $200,000. If the following month 4 other houses sold at $100,000, $150,000, $150,000, and $200,000, the average price of a house sold in your town that month would be $150,000. Just because the average price of a house sold in your town dropped from $200,000 to $150,000 in 1 month does not necessarily mean that houses are decreasing in value. It simply means that fewer expensive houses sold that month. Averages include houses that you don't want to own. Track the prices of houses in neighborhoods that you do want to own. Research what a particular house sold for new and compare it with its resale price to get a real appreciation rate for a neighborhood that interests you. How to learn and anticipate the real trends in your town. To learn how houses have performed as investments in your town, identify several houses that have sold recently in neighborhoods that you think would be a good place to invest. Research what those houses sold for in previous years. You can find this information in your public records. In the past, this usually meant a trip to the courthouse, but now this information is often available online. Now, calculate how much these houses have increased in value per year on average. Continue to track these houses and add others to your research as you discover other neighborhoods that you think have potential. This information will help you to identify neighborhoods with a strong history of growth, and you will begin to learn the values in your town. Neighborhoods and towns are dynamic. They are changing constantly, and you need to become a student of that change. Neighborhoods and towns change like the seasons. If you are paying attention, you can feel, see, and recognize the signs of change early in the cycle. This will enable you to be among the first to buy in a market changing for the better and among the first to sell in a market changing for the worse. Factors that affect house prices in your town. Changes in population. A growing population will create an increasing demand for housing. If your town is growing in population, then your prices probably will outperform the national average. If your town is losing population, your prices may not increase without inflation and could decline if the loss in population is permanent. People make real estate valuable. Without people, land has little value except to hold the earth together. Changes in population in nearby communities will also affect your market. If a nearby city is growing rapidly, then it will have a positive effect on your market. Demographics. When populations change, it's not just in number. As new people move into your town, they will have new needs and demands. If there are young working people moving to your town because of jobs, they will need houses appropriate for children and will want to be near schools and parks that cater to family activities. If the newcomers are retired, then they may want to be near medical centers, entertainment facilities, and restaurants. The U.S. Census Bureau is a valuable source of information about age, income, family size, and education levels. www.census.gov/housing. Government regulation of developers and builders. As populations boom and overwhelm roads, parks, schools, and other public facilities, it is typical for the existing population, through the local government, to react and take steps to slow growth. The result is often a steady increase in the cost and time required to develop land and build new houses. Because it costs more to produce a new house, the existing housing market becomes more valuable. Inflation. Inflation is increasing prices as a result of an increased supply of money and credit. Picture 50 college students in a room. You show up with tickets to a popular sold-out concert that you will sell to the highest bidder, but only for cash. The sales price would be limited to the amount of money in everyone's wallet at the time. If, before you held the auction, you gave everyone in the room $100 in cash, then it's pretty predictable that the amount that they would be willing to pay for the tickets would be higher because they had more money. If you would allow them to bid any amount they wanted and would agree to pay you in 1 year at 6% interest, the price bid would be higher still. The federal government can stimulate economic activity by increasing the amount of money we all have. It does this by both increasing the amount of money in circulation and increasing the amount of money the government lends to banks at relatively low rates. The banks, in turn, can lend this money to consumers and businesses, thereby stimulating buying. Inflation will drive up the prices of all commodities, including land and house prices. Buying houses protects you against inflation because both your house prices and rents will keep up with inflation. A leveraged house will allow you to make a dramatic profit with inflation. Compare prices of commodities that you buy every day with the prices of houses in your town and the rents that they produce. Table 1.1 shows some numbers from my town. Table 1.1, the effect of inflation on your purchasing power. Year, 1980. Commodity, gasoline. Price, $1.08 a gallon. 2016, gasoline, $2.50 a gallon. 1980, chicken, 55 cents a pound. 2016, $3 a pound. 1980, first class postage stamp, 22 cents. 2016, 49 cents. 1980, new Chevy Malibu, $6,000. 2016, $36,000. 1980, new 3-bed, 2-bath, 1,400-square-foot home, $66,700. 2016, $225,000. 1980, rent for the same house, $425 a month. 2016, $1,500 a month. Compare the numbers in your town. The relative value of these items has not changed much. Inflation of the currency has changed the amount of money it takes to buy these items. Some people are confused by the fact that the prices for some items seem to be cheaper, such as computers. When a new product or technology hits the market, it will be priced high in its early years until the demand increases. This increased demand allows manufacturers to increase production to levels where prices fall because of the economy of producing thousands or millions of the same product. Another factor that can drive down prices is competition. Nothing inspires competition like extraordinary profits. In inflationary times, you want to invest in assets, such as houses, that protect you from the tremendous loss in purchasing power that inflation causes. Inflation hurts the investor with cash in the bank. With $100,000 in 1970 in my town, I could have bought 5 brand new homes. With the same $100,000 in 2004, I could buy 1/2 of a house. If you plan on being here 25 years from now, that same house may cost you $2 million. Inflation also hurts those who invest in fixed income investments. If you bought an annuity or held a mortgage with payments of $500 a month in 1970, you would have had enough income to buy a new car every 4 months. With the same income in 2004, it would take you 40 months of income to buy the same car. Everyone can predict the future. Unfortunately, the future usually pays no attention. Dr. Gary North. If the next 25 years are anything like the last 25, the investor with cash in the bank or holding fixed income securities or mortgages will be hurt, whereas investors in real estate will benefit. How 5% per year average appreciation can make you rich. Over the long run, the average house in the United States increases in price about 5% per year. How can an investment that goes up 5% per year make you rich? If you buy a house that will produce income, your return will be much higher than 5%. If you borrow most of your purchase price, your rate of return could be 30% or more. Suppose that you bought a house worth $200,000 and paid a retail price. If you borrowed 80% of your purchase, you would need a 20% or a $40,000 down payment. If the rental income would just cover the monthly payments and the house appreciated at 5% the following year, 5% of $200,000 is $10,000, a 25% return on your $40,000 investment. If you learn how to buy a house at below market prices and then finance even more of the purchase price, your rate of return increases considerably. Suppose that you bought the same $200,000 house for $180,000 and were able to buy it with a $20,000 down payment. You still get 5% appreciation on the full $200,000, so you will earn $10,000 on a $20,000 investment, not accounting for the $20,000 profit you made when you bought the house. The power in buying real estate on leverage comes in the following years as your profits increase at a compounded rate. The next year, your house would be worth $210,000 and go up another 5% or $10,500. The amount the house value goes up increases each year. At the same time, you are paying off debt. See Figure 1.1 in the accompanying PDF. Real estate fortunes are made by buying houses and then by financing them so that you can afford to hold the house until it is free and clear of debt. Doubling your money, the rule of 72. Do you know how long it takes an investment to double in value if it goes up 5% each year? The answer can be calculated by using the mathematical rule of 72, which states that you can calculate the time it will take to double your money by dividing the compounded rate of return, the interest you would earn on a savings account at a bank, into the number 72. See Figure 1.2 on the accompanying PDF. Thus, 72 divided by 5 equals 14.4. It will take 14.4 years for a house that increases in value at the rate of 5% a year to double in value. 72 divided by 5 equals 14.4 years. Doing better than average. You want to buy houses that will double your money sooner. You can shorten the time it takes significantly by doing two things. 1. Learn how to buy a house for less than its retail price. The 5% average appreciation is based on retail prices. When you learn to buy below retail, your rate of return will be significantly higher. 2. Buy a house in an area with better than average appreciation. Some of my houses have averaged 12% a year appreciation. At that rate, they double about every 6 years. If I can buy a house at a below market price that will double in value in 6 years, I can shorten the amount of time it takes me to turn my 10% down payment into $300,000 to 4 years or less. Look at these results. Market value, $200,000. Your purchase price, $180,000. Your down payment, $18,000. Your loan, $162,000. The house appreciates at 12% a year and doubles in value in 6 years. Market value in 6 years, $400,000. Loan balance in 6 years, $150,000. Your equity in 6 years, $250,000. Net return on your down payment, $250,000. Divided by $18,000 equals enough. This does not include cash flow produced by the rental income. Buying with nothing down. Read the classic book, Nothing Down, written by my former student Robert Allen. Robert was a young real estate agent when he took my seminar in the mid-1970s. He bought a number of properties and then wrote about his experience. You can buy property with nothing down. If you doubt that, look for a property in your town that has been empty for 6 months or more. Make the owners an offer with nothing down and agree to take responsibility for the property and begin making them monthly payments. When you own an empty property for months and months, the prospect of someone else taking care of it and making monthly payments to you looks good. I know. Some properties that you can buy with nothing down, you may end up selling for nothing down to the next adventurer. There is a lot of property that is only attractive to people with no money. As you acquire more money, you acquire better taste in property. Sometimes great properties are available with nothing down. It's not the property that has the problem, it's the owner. Find an owner who has a big problem that he cannot solve, and you may have found an owner who will sell to you with nothing down. A local lender foreclosed on a property that was occupied by several tenants and a pit bull. After the dog chased the bank representative off the property, the bank sold the property the next week at way below market and nothing down. When you buy with nothing down, you owe it all. When you buy a property with nothing down, you owe the full amount of your purchase price. The terms you get on the money you borrow are more important when you borrow the entire amount than when you buy with less leverage. If you can't make the payments, you will not own the property long enough to make a profit. You need a plan to generate enough income to repay the loan, or you will soon lose the property. Buying with high leverage is risky business. It is a great way to acquire property when you are starting, but it's like driving a car at a high speed. You need to be totally focused on what you are doing, or there is a good possibility of a wreck. Another student of mine purchased more than 100 houses. Really, the year after he took my class. He bought many of them with nothing down because he was starting out with almost no money. Unfortunately, he bought faster than he could find good tenants. Eventually, he sold most of these properties for little or no profit because he could not afford to make the payments on a lot of empty houses. If you buy more than you can manage, nothing down can lead to nothing left. Buying 100 houses, one at a time. Other investors have accumulated more than 100 houses following my advice to buy them one at a time. Buy one, rent one, then and only then, look for the next deal. By using this strategy, you will learn management at the same time you learn to buy. Ask yourself this question: if I begin buying houses, will I make a better deal on my first 5 houses or the last 5 houses that I buy? If you are learning from the experience, you will make much better buys on the last 5 houses. Chapter 2. Buying the house that will make you the most money. Now that you can see how buying houses can make you money, it's time to get into the specifics of which house you should buy. Having a plan and buying a house that fits into that plan will help you to meet your goals in a shorter time. Most people who buy real estate do not set out to buy a particular property. They just look at everything that is for sale and hope to find a good deal. You can do far better by targeting a house that will make you the most money. Not all houses are created equal. Some houses will appreciate more, some will produce more cash flow because they will attract better tenants, and others will require more maintenance and have higher expenses. No house is perfect, but you can increase your profit significantly when you target a certain house to buy. Buying houses with a plan will make you more money sooner. Buying different houses for different reasons. An advantage of investing in houses is that, over time, you probably will buy more than one. Owning different houses in different neighborhoods allows you to diversify. Some houses will produce more cash flow, and some will appreciate more. Owning houses of different sizes, different ages, and different prices makes your portfolio safer than owning one larger property because your income and expenses are spread over many properties. When you begin to invest, naturally you will focus on properties that produce more income. Less expensive starter homes will produce more cash flow. These homes often are built in tracts where all the lots are the same size and all the houses are about the same size and look a lot alike. They are around 1,000 to 1,200 square feet in total size, with small bedrooms and few frills. These houses are in high demand and often appreciate at an above average rate because few new ones are being produced. Most new houses are larger, more elaborate, and more expensive. The more expensive house typically produces more profit for the builder. Starter houses rent well and generally rent fast. During hard economic times, tenants often downsize to these houses to save money. The next step up on the investment ladder is a slightly larger house in a little better neighborhood. There are several reasons to buy these houses as investments. 1. Houses that are a step up from a starter are more likely to attract a longer-term tenant because they have more space and better neighbors. You can buy this size house in a neighborhood that is predominantly owner-occupied. Owners take better care of their property than most landlords, so the neighborhood will look better and attract better-looking tenants. 2. If you have other income, pay taxes, and want to reduce your taxable income, you can do that by investing in slightly more expensive houses. A more expensive house can produce larger capital gains but less net rent in relation to its value. The tax rate on capital gains income is typically significantly lower than the tax rate on ordinary income, such as rental income. If you can buy a more expensive house at a bigger discount, then you are using the tax system to your advantage to earn larger profits and pay less in taxes. Study the example of houses that you can buy in different price ranges shown in Table 2.1. Table 2.1. Making more, buying higher priced houses. Asking price, $100,000. Your purchase price, $90,000. Rental income, $8,000. Asking price, $150,000. Your purchase price, $135,000. Rental income, $10,000. Asking price, $200,000. Your purchase price, $175,000. Rental income, $12,000. Asking price, $300,000. Your purchase price, $260,000. Rental income, $15,000. Asking price, $400,000. Your purchase price, $350,000. Rental income, $18,000. These prices and rents represent no particular market, just the principle that as you buy more expensive houses, you are able to buy at bigger dollar discounts. Also notice that the rents do not increase in direct proportion with the price of the house. The lower-priced houses produce more rental income as a percentage of their value. If the income is important to you, start with the lowest-priced house in your town that is in a decent neighborhood. A high-income taxpayer would have more after-tax profit if he bought a more expensive house, because more of the profit that the house produces would be a capital gain and less would be rent. Buying in the best neighborhood that you can afford. Buyers and tenants are attracted to neighborhoods that are quiet, safe, well-maintained, and populated by responsible people. Good neighbors make a good neighborhood. Buy houses in neighborhoods where you feel safe and comfortable talking to the neighbors. The tenant you are likely to rent to probably will look and talk a lot like the people who already live on the street. You need to be able to relate well to your tenant, so you should relate well to the neighbors. Good neighbors are attracted by many factors, including geography, high ground, the right exposure and proximity to roads, rivers, lakes, or oceans, hospitals, work, and schools are all factors that affect desirability and therefore value. Study the geography in your town and learn why certain areas are more popular and therefore more valuable. Schools have a significant effect on neighborhood values. Get to know which schools in your areas are the most desirable. Become knowledgeable about which schools are improving and which are becoming less desirable. Watch for information about planned new schools and possible redistricting. Both tenants and buyers will want to live in the best school districts that they can afford. Often new schools are popular and attract both good teachers and good students. Buy in the best neighborhood that you can afford. A house in a better neighborhood will make you more money. If you are beginning with little, then still buy in the best neighborhood that you can afford. As you build more cash and cash flow, you will be able to afford to move up a notch in location. Buying a house that will attract a long-term tenant. When you buy a house that you want to hold as an investment, you want it to be attractive to good tenants, tenants who will stay a long time and take good care of your property. You want to rent to a tenant with long-term potential, not someone who is constantly on the move. Tenants with a long-term potential typically are coming out of another house where they have accumulated furniture and lots of other stuff. You want to buy a house that has enough space for such a tenant to live in comfortably. The overwhelming majority of home buyers prefer at least a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house. Renters have the same preferences. If you buy a smaller house, you will have to compete at a disadvantage with all the 3-bedroom houses in your town for rent. There is not a big difference in price between a 2-bedroom and a 3-bedroom house, but there is a big difference in demand. The 3-bedroom house will rent faster and stay rented longer. Buy houses that have 3 or more bedrooms. Larger houses containing 4 or 5 bedrooms are common in communities with larger families. They also appeal to extended families where several generations share a house. This trend will increase as house prices and rents continue to rise. These larger dwellings have higher maintenance, but they can be as profitable when there is demand for them as rentals. You would learn about this from your research before you start making offers. Garages or basements are big pluses both when you sell and when you rent. Storage space is important to everyone. Again, the cost of buying a house with a garage or basement is not that much higher, but the garage or basement is a big advantage when you rent or sell. Yards are a big selling point to families with children and pets. In my town, most tenants have both, so having a fenced backyard makes it easier to rent or sell. Tenants will maintain a yard, but rarely will improve one. Look for houses with average size yards for your town. A large yard may scare off tenants who see it as too big of a job. The lack of a backyard that kids can play in is a definite disadvantage. A nearby park can compensate for a small yard. Some houses are too big or too fancy for investment. While you can argue that once you own the lot and the house, a few extra square feet costs little money to add, in reality, every square foot you add to a house does cost you. The fixed costs, such as taxes and insurance, increase with size and value, and so does the cost to maintain the house. An investment house should be big enough to attract an average-sized family with their belongings, but not much bigger. I would be comfortable living in any of my rental houses because the neighborhoods are quiet and the neighbors are friendly. However, the investment houses are smaller and lack some of the luxury items that you may be used to in your own home. Buy a house that is functional and well-located, and then keep it in good operating condition. Don't buy a house with a lot of fragile items such as fancy wallpaper, trim, elaborate landscaping, and so on. The tenants won't take care of it, and it will not look as good in a year as it does today. Avoid houses with high-maintenance frills such as pools and hot tubs. They are expensive to maintain and insure, and only a small percentage of the buying and renting population will pay the price to have such things. It's the lot that goes up, not the house. Every day, a house is wearing out and becoming obsolete. It's the lot that is becoming more valuable. To make the most money, you want to buy the best lot that you can, and hopefully that lot will be improved with a house that you can rent to a decent tenant while you wait for the lot to make you some serious money. Some lots are better than others. Avoid lots on busy streets or strangely shaped lots. Even corner lots are not as valuable as interior lots. With a corner lot, you have to set the house back from two streets. This leaves you with a big front yard on two sides, but an unusually small backyard. Although corner lots are good for model homes, most owners would rather have a backyard. Always walk the lot line and look over any fences. If there is a problem property or neighbor next door, learn about it before you buy. You can fix a house, but it's a lot harder to fix a bad neighbor. The location of the lot is the key to how much money you will make in the long run. The advantage of buying several houses for investments is that you can target 3 or 4 neighborhoods in your town that you feel will appreciate at better than average rates. If you buy in all three or four, then you are likely to hit a couple of hot areas that will give you a larger than average profit. Buy in a neighborhood that is on the way up. Neighborhoods are changing constantly. When they are new, most neighborhoods are almost totally owner-occupied. As the houses age, some owners will rent their houses or sell to investors who will rent them. The rental houses are rarely maintained as well as owner-occupied houses, and they have a negative effect on values. Sometimes the neighborhood will become completely owned by landlords. You can spot these streets by a lack of pride of ownership. If these neighborhoods are in good locations, eventually owners will begin moving back in and buying bargains that they can fix up and live in. When this happens, property values will start to appreciate rapidly. Study the neighborhoods that interest you to see if you can establish where they are in this cycle. Buy in an area that is improving, and you will make more money. Financing determines your cash flow. Your ability to borrow and to make down payments will change with time. You may start with little money and no credit. You can still buy a house. You will need to find a non-traditional source of financing, such as owners who will sell you their house and finance the purchase for you. I have never borrowed money from a bank to buy a property. When I started investing in real estate, I was working as a commissioned real estate salesman with no history of producing income and no predictable income. The banks would not make me loans to buy property because I had no demonstrable way to pay the loans back. As I began to buy houses and accumulate both equity and cash flow, the bankers began courting my business. By then, I had found both faster and cheaper sources of money. To this day, I have never borrowed money from a bank to buy a house. Other investors, sellers of property, and private lenders provide a source of both down payments and long-term financing. In chapters 8 and 9, you will learn to use all three. The terms of your financing will determine if you can buy a house with the down payment that you have and afford the payment each month. Ideally, you will be able to borrow on a long-term fixed-rate loan. With a fixed-rate loan, you get to keep the profits as your rents increase. With a variable-rate loan, the lender will make more money as interest rates rise. A long-term loan is important to you if you plan on holding a house for investment. The longer-term loan will have lower payments. Low payments make this a safer investment. Avoid short-term loans. You may have to sell or refinance to pay them off. If interest rates are higher when you have to sell or refinance, you may end up paying a much higher interest rate or selling at a discount. As the economy changes, you will borrow at different interest rates. When rates are the highest, you will make your best buys. When rates drop, you will be able to borrow at low rates and refinance your high interest rate debt, increasing your cash flow. Producing cash flow. The cash flow a house produces depends on both its financing and its ability to produce income. If you finance the house with a long-term, low-interest rate loan, then you have won half the battle. The other half of the challenge is buying a house that will attract long-term tenants and will have average or below-average operating expenses, such as taxes, insurance, and maintenance. Before you buy, research the property taxes and learn if they will change if you buy the house. Property taxes often increase when a property is sold. Contact a local insurance agent and get an estimate of what it will cost to insure a house of the construction and age you are considering. Estimating the maintenance cost is more difficult. A well-designed, well-built, and well-maintained house should be cheaper to maintain. A house that has an older roof and mechanical systems will cost more to operate. An experienced home inspector or friendly building contractor can look over a house and give you advice about how much maintenance that house is likely to require. Don't ask someone whom you might hire to do repair or maintenance work to inspect the house. That's like asking your barber if you need a haircut. Renting to responsible tenants. We all have little personality quirks. It bothers me when people don't take care of things. If I loan you something, I'd like you to return it and return it in good condition. This can be a problem when you loan someone a nice house to live in and then they don't take care of it. Yes, they pay rent to live there, but that does not give them the right to abuse your property. The good news is that if you buy a decent house on a safe street, you can attract tenants who will take good care of it. I have had hundreds of tenants and only a few bad ones. One measure of your success as a landlord is the number of tenants you have to evict, that is, legally forced to leave your house. I have had to evict only 6 tenants. The others have paid as agreed and taken reasonable care of the property. This record with tenants is not just good luck. I learned many of my lessons the hard way, by making expensive mistakes. Hopefully, you won't have to repeat the same mistakes to learn the lesson. One of my first investments was a brand new 9-unit apartment building. It was a beautiful property, and I thought that I would own it forever. Until I met the tenants. I thought that there would be a certain efficiency in having 9 tenants living close together. Collecting the rent should be easy. Just drop by on the first of the month and pick up my money. The first month, I dropped by to find only 1 tenant home. There were plenty of cars in the parking lot, but after I knocked on the first door, no one else would answer. It took me 9 visits to sneak up on all 9 tenants, and after all of that effort, I still got several stories and promises to pay rather than actual rent. Here I was, a young, poor landlord who needed every rent check from that building to make the mortgage payment. The tenants saw me as a wealthy landlord, but the truth was that they drove better cars than I did. To add insult to injury, many had bigger TVs than I did too, yet they would not pay me the rent. It was a cultural difference. These tenants came from a culture where if you could talk the landlord out of the rent, it was a good thing. I learned that I wanted to own property that would attract tenants who felt that paying the rent on time was a good thing and would feel some remorse if they were late. A tenant, not too rich and not too poor. Your first reaction might be that a tenant can't be too rich. The problem with a rich tenant is that she won't stay long. She will buy, and you will have a vacancy again. Tenants certainly can be too poor. People are poor because they don't have any money. There may be a lot of good reasons why they don't have any money, but if they don't have money, they will not pay the rent. I divide potential tenants into 3 broad groups: those with too much money, those without enough money, and those with just the right amount of money. Obviously, I want to buy a house that the last group can afford and wants to rent. The amount of money that good tenants earn varies from place to place. Most of my tenants have hourly or commission jobs and earn between 2 and 3 times the base wage in my town. Often, there is more than 1 wage earner in the family. Their income should be close to 3 times the rent. If they have several children and a car payment, they will need more. Many tenants have enough income to afford to buy a house if they would just pay off their bills and save up a down payment. Those 2 obstacles are insurmountable for most. Study your market. Don't rent to people at either end of the income range in your town. Aim at tenants who make enough money to afford your rent and their other normal expenses. Later, you will learn about tenant screening and selection. Buying your first house. You want your first house investment to be a success, especially if you are married. You increase your chances of success by buying close to where you live. It may not be in your neighborhood, but it should be as close as possible. Most people live only a few minutes from an area of houses that would make good investments. When you target an area close to where you live, you can spend time in that neighborhood and really learn the market. Walk the streets and talk to the neighbors. Tell them that you want to buy a house in their neighborhood and ask them if they know of anyone who wants to sell. You are complimenting them on living in a nice neighborhood. You will be surprised at how helpful they will be. Call on every house for sale and for rent until you know the market well enough that you can walk down a street and give a price and rent for each house. Use a range. It would sell for between $200,000 and $225,000. Or it would rent for between $1,400 and $1,500. You are making the assumption that the houses are in rentable condition and, of course, would offer less on a house that needed work. When a house comes on the market, you will know what it is worth and what it will rent for. You can confidently make an offer, knowing that if the owner accepts, you have made a good deal. Chapter 3. Real Estate Bubbles, Crashes, and Cycles. What causes a real estate bubble? A housing bubble is caused by the speculation of many home buyers and home builders. Speculation is buying with the hopes of a large profit and at the same time taking a large risk. The large risk in real estate speculation is made possible by lenders that allow home buyers and builders to borrow a high percentage of the purchase price, even when they have no way to repay, except from increasing house and land prices. During the last housing bubble that peaked in 2007, many buyers surpassed a nothing down purchase by borrowing more than they paid for the property. A speculator would buy a house for $250,000, obtain a $225,000 first mortgage, and a $75,000 second mortgage. Their plan was to use the proceeds from the second mortgage to make the payments on the first until they sold the house at a profit. Of course, when real estate prices peaked and reversed, most of those who had speculated gave the property back to the lender, causing a huge amount of foreclosures. The foreclosed properties then sold at bargain prices for far less than it would cost to produce them and dragged the prices of the non-foreclosed prices down with them. This caused many non-speculators to lose their homes as prices dropped 50% or more as markets crashed. Millions of homes were then bought at bargain prices by investors and hedge funds set up to take advantage of properties selling for far less than they're worth. These properties could be rented for immediate returns that exceeded normal rental returns. The federal government can contribute to bubbles by creating programs that allow home buyers to buy with little or nothing down and with reduced requirements for income and credit. The foreclosure rate when someone has little or nothing invested and marginal income and credit is often high. A downturn in housing markets can be caused by many things, including a problem in a local economy, like a major military base or employer closing. It could be caused by the national economy tanking or, like in 1986, a major revision in the federal tax code. You might foresee some of these events, but probably you won't. If smart people could foresee major changes in the economy, why would the biggest and smartest investors in the world get caught holding billions in bad mortgages? Crashes can be regional. A crash in another state may not affect your market at all. Often, crashes occur regionally when builders overbuild and lenders overlend. This creates too many houses and prices will flatten or fall. If a crash is a result of rampant speculation, but you live in a conservative part of the country where buyers do not borrow as much, then your market may not be as affected. Many conservative markets just chug along with small increases in prices and rents each year. Other markets, like Florida, seem to have recurring booms and busts. If your prices are rising at 15 or 20% a year, you should suspect that a change is coming. Study the history of prices and rents in your town. If you live in an area of low but steady growth, your cycles may be mild. If you live in a booming area, know that booms are often followed by busts, and plan for them. 6 signs your market might be near the top. 1. It's too easy to borrow money. Lenders are soliciting you. 2. Everyone is buying. All of your friends, your tenants, your yard man, your yard man's kids. 3. Prices are moving up much faster than rents. 4. Buyers are over-leveraging property. The seller has bought a new house, and it closes in 2 weeks. Their payments cannot be made with the rent the property produces. Buyers are able to buy with nothing down. 5. Builders are speculating in both land and houses. They are building with borrowed money, hoping to find a buyer at a profit. They also borrow to buy land for future building. 6. Without appreciation, there would be no profit. With an investment, you make a reasonable return from the net rents that you collect without appreciation. Appreciation is a bonus, not your primary source of profit. How a crash can be good for you. A crash in your market may actually be good for you if you are ready for it. A real estate crash drives the prices of property below their actual value. A house that costs $150,000 to build and rents for $1,400 a month might be bought for $100,000 after a crash. In my market in Florida and in many other towns, houses appreciated from $125,000 to $250,000, then crashed back to less than $150,000